Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and I have my friend, Angie, here today. I am so excited for her to share her story. So, Angie, why don't you introduce yourself?
Leticia, thanks for having me on. I'm so excited to be here. And hello, everybody, those of you listening. So, my name's Angie Barrett. And I am a trauma-informed coach. I am a play expert. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm also a child abuse survivor. So my story of survival started years and years ago. And the way that I have recollections of it is not the way that it happened chronologically. So I'll tell you chronologically, even though that's not how I remember it. So like I said, I'm a child abuse survivor. And my abuse started when I was very young. Started before I really even have any memories. And it went on for probably until I left my house for college. It was my abusers. I had multiple abusers. They were friends of my parents, and it happened at church. And so it went on behind my parents' back. My parents were not involved, although there was a significant amount of what I have later come to realize is neglect, just based on the fact that my parents didn't know what was happening. These were their friends, and I was just kind of given over to them at church because my parents trusted them. And so I experienced sexual abuse, I experienced physical abuse, mental abuse, so much so to the point that I actually had no memory of my abuse until about 10 years ago. I just knew I always had what I called this black hole of pain inside of me. Just this, I don't even know how to describe it, this turmoil, this swirling tornado of pain and despair. And I never quite knew what it was. But I left for college. I was able to go to college. I became a registered nurse. I got married, ended up marrying an abusive partner. Abuse in childhood tends to lend itself to abusive partners. And even though I didn't realize what had happened to me, I ended up marrying somebody who was fairly abusive, not physically abusive, was much more emotionally and mentally abusive. And so it was better than what I had in childhood. So I didn't quite realize that there was, I knew deep in my gut that something wasn't right. And yet I didn't know what it was. But I became a registered nurse. And it's interesting. So I also, when I became a nurse, I have always worked high acuity, high stressful jobs. I worked emergency department, trauma, intensive care units, because I thrived on chaos. When things were calm, I felt unsafe. And so the chaos of the emergency department, the sickness of people in the ICU, I worked it's called a cardiothoracic post-open heart surgery. So people after they've had open heart surgery. And those are very critical patients, lots of medications, life and death is regularly on the line. And so that's how I thrive. That's the only way that I knew how to survive. When things were calm and were easy, I got really anxious. And once again, didn't know that was a trauma response, didn't realize that was part of my survival mode. That all has come later. And yet, living in that environment created its own trauma. That's very traumatic to be in a healthcare setting where you have people's lives in your hands on a constant daily basis and to see the horrible things people do to themselves and to others. Continued on with my life. My ex and I ended up getting divorced. It was a very ugly and nasty divorce. And, but I just realized that I finally couldn't be in that relationship any longer. It was no longer serving me. Around the same time, I also left my religion. That was part of the reason I stayed for so long, was because in my religion and the way that I grew up, you just don't get divorced. You stay, you figure out how to make it work. And so there was some trauma surrounding that as well. And I finally realized my sanity was worth more than staying. So I got divorced and started on a journey to heal. And still no memories of my childhood abuse. I always knew, like I said, I had this black hole of pain. And then about 10 years ago, I was dating someone and they ended up cheating on me and letting me know that they were now in a new relationship with somebody else through a post on Facebook. And so that was horrible. That sent me into this downward spiral, the betrayal of this person that I loved so much in such a very public way, unlocked the memories of my child abuse. So I actually started dealing with dueling traumas, the trauma of my partner cheating on me, as well as now the memories of my child abuse. And so I hit rock bottom. I was actively suicidal, didn't want to live anymore, had to take a break from nursing because nursing actually became too much for me. And I ended up checking myself into an inpatient psychiatric unit that specializes in trauma and PTSD, because I knew I needed more help than what I could get anywhere else. So I spent about a month there and really started, that's what started my journey to get out of where I was. And that's when realizing that I had been abused as a child helped me to start to tap into that black hole of pain that I had inside me. I at least understood what it was and why I had it. And so peeling away those layers was so painful, so uncomfortable, and just was so challenging. And like I said, I took a break from nursing and I needed something to do. And I practiced yoga for most of my life. I've been a student of yoga. And the studio where I practiced at was offering a yoga teacher training. So I thought, what? I'm going to go become a yoga teacher because I need something to do. So I took the training and I loved it. I loved that I was able to work not only with my body in a way that was preventative or proactive rather than reactive, the way that healthcare was, the way that I was working in healthcare. And it gave me a chance to start to connect my mind and body, which I was so disconnected from. And so started teaching yoga, and then it was interesting. It actually got to a point where I actually couldn't practice yoga anymore. The sensory information coming from my body put me into shutdown every single time I tried to go to a class. And yet I could teach it, but that's because I was still somewhat distanced from feeling into my body. I had to stay relatively mentally disconnected from my body in order to continue to teach. And I could do that. But when I tried to go to a class and be a student, I just ended up curled up in the fetal position, unable to move. Couldn't cry, couldn't do anything. So I stopped going because I was embarrassed. I didn't want people to see me curled up in the corner doing nothing. And then COVID hit. And during COVID, I took what's called a trauma-informed yoga instructor training. A friend of mine who knew I had PTSD said she was taking this trauma yoga training and asked if I wanted to take it. And I thought, absolutely, I'd love to learn how to see if I can get some connection to my body back, work with other people who experience trauma, and learn why I can't do yoga anymore. And so I took this yoga teacher training and it was phenomenal. I loved it. There are some pretty big differences between trauma-informed yoga and more traditional yoga. There's more space, there's more openness, more exploration. It's not so linked with the breath, typically the way that traditional yoga is. And so it just kind of opened up this whole world for me. And then while I was doing the yoga teacher training, a couple of things happened kind of around the same time that really changed things for me. So I was still doing therapy, still working on healing from my child abuse, and In my trauma yoga training, we did a module about how play helps us to tap into part of our nervous system that allows us to feel safe, allows us to feel connected so that we can start to heal. It's a part of our nervous system called the ventral vagal. And so we started playing. And I thought, I don't ever really remember playing as a child. I know I did, but it, play, I don't have a whole lot of memories from my childhood. And so play felt very uncomfortable for me. And kind of around the same time, I was doing a protocol with my therapist designed for people who experience trauma at a young age, people who have no idea what safety is. So often on trauma healing journeys, we hear people say, think of a time where you felt safe. Well, for some of us, we never felt safe. I never felt safe. I don't know what safety means, or I didn't at the time know what safety meant because that was never something that I had fully experienced. It's designed, this protocol I did with my therapist is designed for people who experience trauma at a young age, don't know what safety is. And so it's a way to clear our circuits or clear our brain. And I learned that all mammals, and by the way, we humans are mammals, are born with the same nervous systems. So we have the same nervous systems that animals do. And all mammals come out knowing seven things when they're born. And one of those seven things is play. And think of how babies learn and how puppies learn and how animals, learn how to navigate their world. It's through play. And so I learned about play in these two really different spaces, and yet I learned how powerful they were. So I started to play. And people always ask me, Angie, what do you mean by play? What exactly, how do you play? And the example I give, and Leticia, you know this, I love elephants. They are my favorite. And so I pretended like I was an elephant. And so I would stomp around my house big like an elephant. Because one of the things I learned when I was a child, growing up with the abuse the way that I did, is that I had to be small because to be big was unsafe. That's danger. And so when I stomped around like an elephant, I got to feel in my body what it felt like to be big, to be powerful, to be this amazing creature. And my brain didn't give me that danger, 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 shut down, curl up in the fetal position, and freeze. And so that just kind of blew my mind that I got to feel these things without my body and my brain shutting down because I was pretending I was playing. And so I evolved it, I developed it. I pretended to be a fish swimming, I pretended to be the rain falling, tapping into the elements of the earth. And my healing just changed. It just astronomically started to, layers just started to peel away because I was able to release that stored trauma that I had in my body. And I started being able to connect my mind and my body in ways that I never had without shutting down. And it evolved into this whole big movement, literally. I told friends who had experienced life stressors, not trauma to the degree that I had, but their own degree of trauma. I think everybody in this world experiences trauma to some degree. What constant stress creates the same impact as big T trauma in our bodies. And so I told people who'd had regular life stressors, and I put that in quotes or air quotes, and I showed them and it worked for them. And it was able, they were able to release some of this anxiety and stress and swirling emotions that they had inside of them. And so now I coach women how to use movement and play to connect to their bodies, letting go of these negative self-beliefs, finding this connection with their mind and body, and disrupting their survival to help them move into thriving and peace and joy.
I love everything that you do, right, Angie? But thank you, first of all, for sharing your story. But you've touched on a few really key points, and I'm gonna start with the first one, right? One of the reasons why I started this podcast is because I don't think enough people have adequate awareness of the residual impact of trauma. And you spoke about having this black hole of pain, right? That was literally your trauma stored in your body. And what our brain is amazing for is compartmentalizing things to keep us safe. So it removed that memory to keep you safe, even though you might not have identified that as safety. but your trauma was still stored in your body,
Yes.
right? And I think we don't discuss how trauma manifests enough, which is why, to your second pretty amazing point, was that it doesn't take sexual abuse as a child. It doesn't take abuse as an adult. It is compounded small t trauma that can also create this massive state of autopilot for us, where we essentially don't have executive decisions nailed. We are just really just showing up and operating in life and doing the best that we can to survive. And a lot of people are operating from that space without even that awareness. Now, on this podcast, listeners, you will hear some massive big T traumas, because I also want to highlight that no matter what you go through, you always are in a position to move beyond that state of survival. But I think it's just really important for us to emphasize that it doesn't really take much for us to end up in survival mode if we don't have the skills or tools to move ourselves beyond this prolonged state of stress.
I think it also comes down to knowledge, awareness. So often in today's society, we're taught to disconnect. The more productive you can be, the more valued you are when you stop and take time for yourself or have feelings or emotions. We're labeled as needy, we're labeled as lazy, all these negative beliefs, whether people say them to you or you say them to yourself. And so this act of disconnecting from our bodies is paramount. Like I said, I was a registered nurse. And so even putting aside my childhood trauma, working as a nurse was traumatizing. So I would have to compartmentalize. Somebody would come in that needed help that was a, could be very emotionally charged, and I couldn't have any feelings. I had to completely shut those off in order to take care of that person. And so job stressors, worries about money, those types of things. Our nervous system, I said we have the same nervous system animals do. Our nervous system doesn't know the difference between a threat from an email and the threat from a lion. It's going to respond the same way. It's going to produce the same hormones, the big response preparing us to fight or to flee. And so if we don't release that fight or that flight energy, so when our body feels a threat, we go into fight or flight. And our body actually changes. It releases hormones, chemical messengers, preparing us to run or to fight. And so think, your heart rate increases, blood flow goes from your belly, your gut, to your vital organs, preparing you to run and go. And so you have this kind of swirling energy. And most of us, what we do is we stuff it down because we don't want to feel it. It's uncomfortable. And so awareness of what that feels like and then finding a way to release that is how we let go of that trauma. Like I said, your body doesn't know the difference between an email and a lion. If it senses a threat, it responds the same way.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think most people have this misconception about trauma in itself, right? Trauma, by definition, is that incomplete response of having a emotional reaction to a set of stimuli that creates that need for fight, flight, and fawn, oftentimes, and then unable to regulate, to complete the cycle of getting back to that homeostasis point where before the trauma or the event occurred, right? And oftentimes, because we don't complete that cycle, that's where the trauma then gets stored. That stuffing that we are conditioned to do in society is essentially creating a trauma event for us, because we are not
Absolutely.
completing the cycle, the natural cycle that is required in order to not experience a stimuli as trauma.
Agreed. And I'm going to add a little caveat to that. You said an emotional response. I'm going to say emotional, yes, and physical. Our body physically responds. And so when we're able to start to tap into that physical response that comes, that's where some of that awareness can happen. Because you're right, completing the cycle, and part of completing the cycle is releasing that fight or flight energy, finding a way to let that go. One of the examples I give is think of now, if you've been in a major car accident and this is a trauma trigger for you, skip this one. Don't do this. But the example I give is you're almost in a car accident, but you're not. So you're driving along and you maybe almost get in an accident, but you don't. And so what do most of us do? Like, think about what happens. Your heart rate starts to increase, your body starts to prepare for brace for impact. Think of how maybe you feel. And then what do? You stuff it down and you keep driving because nothing happened. Whereas, once again, coming back to animals, we have the same nervous system as animals. And studies have been done on animals that show they do this kind of shakeout. They shake out their arms, they shake out their legs, this discharge of energy to release that fight or flight energy. And then they don't have signs of stored trauma the way that we humans do, because they do this shakeout of energy to release that trauma. And so, even just shaking your arm, shaking your legs, just shaking your body is a great way to start to release that energy to complete that fight or flight cycle, like you were talking about.
And it's interesting because that brings me to the third point, which I think was key that you brought up as you told your story. You spoke to essentially being addicted to the chaos, right? And essentially, what she's saying, listeners, is her body got addicted to the fight and flight response because that cycle was not completed. She wasn't regulating her nervous system. So the energy gets stored. And what happens when you store stuff? The storage gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Your body gets used to the physical reaction, the hormone releases, the way that our body re responds to being in fight and flight. So if we then are not in it, the body is craving that state, which is often why people who have endured traumas end up enduring similar traumas over and over and over because the body has now convinced itself that the fight and flight is homeostasis, not calm, not peace, not zen. So that's why it's so important. These conversations are so important because you have to understand what is happening in your body in order for you to consciously make a different decision in how you deal with it. And one of the things that I've loved about our conversations, Angie, is you are not this, we're not into talk, not saying that talk therapy is not good. Don't get me wrong here. It serves its purpose. However, we've discussed, alternative methods for dealing, particularly with trauma. So you've mentioned play, you've slightly touched on movement, and I want to go there a little further. And then we had an even more interesting conversation that I want to slightly tap into after that.
My brain is racing, by the way, because I have so many things to say. So our bodies actually, there is a real thing called stress addiction. So our bodies change and become addicted to the high levels of cortisol. Cortisol is one of our stress hormones. In fact, so much so that our cells actually change and we get extra receptors for cortisol on our cells. So when we don't have that high influx of cortisol and stress hormones, we go through withdrawals. So when you start to come out of survival mode, come out of that fight or flight, you crave it. It really is an addiction. And so finding other alternatives and ways to calm your body down when you're craving something, anything. A lot of times some of us use food, substances, alcohol. I definitely used all of the above as I was starting to come out of that because that discomfort and that craving was so much. Until I learned about movement. So, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna invite y'all to do a little move with me because I'm gonna show you what I mean by that. Movement actually can really help you tap into what your body's trying to tell you, as well as it can actually settle you down when you're feeling those cravings or that angsty, anxiety, swirlingness. So I'm going to invite you to start. You can do this seated, you can do it standing, whatever you want, but just start with the side-to-side sway. And start to check in with your body. Notice what's coming up. It might be uncomfortable for you, totally fine, but notice what your toes are doing. Check in with your belly. A lot of times when we get tense, our stomach and our gut tightens. What happens with your shoulders and your jaw? Now I'm going to invite you to go front to back and start to notice what happens. Leticia, you just instantly, your shoulders went up, your face, you started leading with your neck more. So we all have one direction that feels soothing to us and one that feels uncomfortable. So go to the direction that feels soothing. Whether it's side to side, front to back, mine is side to side. Leticia, yours is side to side, it looks like. And so when we're in this direction that feels more comfortable, that's what our body feels like when it's in a state of relaxation, of rest, when we're in calm. Now, go the direction that feels uncomfortable. This is also going to give you information. This starts to give you information of what it's like that your body's trying to tell you when it's going into stress mode. Your shoulders are tight. Your jaw, check in with your jaw, your toes, and your fingers. And so this movement starts to tell you what's happening. Now go back to the side that feels comfortable. Now, I'm going to invite you to shake it out. So shake out your arms. This is where that tapping into our animal nervous system, discharge that energy. Now, here comes the play element. I'm going to show you how play really can change that discomfort that we feel. So now I'm going to invite you to pretend like you are a tree. So planting your feet into the ground. Once again, you can do this seated, but really find all four corners of your feet. And if you're seated, kind of lengthen up through your sitting bones, lengthen up through your spine. Imagine that your spine is like the trunk of a tree. Now imagine that you, so start swaying side to side or front to back, whichever direction feels more comfortable for you. And imagine that you're a tree, just letting the wind blow. And as you start to find your rhythm, maybe start to go the direction that feels uncomfortable. And as you just pretend like you're a tree, don't think about anything else. Start to notice, Leticia, your eyes seem to be a lot more open. Your shoulders have dropped as you're pretending to be the tree going the direction that feels uncomfortable. So play is where we get to experience that discomfort, not getting rid of it, but experiencing it in a way that doesn't put us into overwhelm or shoulders up by our ears, and then come back to the direction that feels soothing. Find that sway, let your body settle down, and then shake it out. So, once again, shake out your arms, shake out your legs. Your body is sending you so much information. In fact, researchers have found, and I don't know how they came up with these numbers, but they did, that our body gathers information from all of our senses at a rate of 11 million bits of information per second. So sight, taste, touch, sound, all of that. Our body's sending to our brain at a rate of 11 million bits of information per second. Guess how much your brain can process on average per second?
Maybe eight.
50. 50 bits of information. Yeah. So out of
Wow.
11 million to 50, like that's a whole lot of information that our body is sending to our brain that our conscious brain can't process. And so that's where that swirling energy starts to come in because our body's sensing things and our brain can't process what it is. And that's that trauma. So when we come to a move like side to side or front to back sway, even just that doing it for 30 seconds starts to relax your system, allow your brain to come online and say, okay, I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling blah, 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 whatever. I get horrible anxiety going to the grocery store. So I do that standing in line at the grocery store because that calms my nervous system. And so even a simple movement like swaying side to side, front to back, pretending you're a tree, gives you information as well as helps to regulate your nervous system when things are uncomfortable and you're starting to come out of that withdrawal, out of that survival mode.
That was so helpful, and I hope listeners that participated in this because, giving you options or alternatives to helping you regulate your nervous system is a gift, because most of us don't even know that we have this stored energy. We have these incomplete cycles that are essentially ushering us straight into survival mode. It's key. And I operate under three phases in terms of exiting survival mode. And you touched on the first one already, and that's the level of awareness, right? Oftentimes we are operating from a place of ignorance, and I don't say that in a mean way. We just lack the information required for us to make better decisions. Why, again, this podcast is actually really important. Now, for the last couple of minutes, Angie, I really want to touch on other alternatives to recovering from trauma. And we've talked about mushrooms, we talked about LSD. Let's dive in a little bit, because I just think therapy isn't for everyone. I was a person after my suicide attempt in my teenage years, I was in therapy for years and never really felt like I was moving forward. It felt like all I did was re-traumatize myself in order to move forward. And I think it's always important to have conversations about what other methods are available. So enlighten us.
Okay. Now, I'm about to talk about some things that are illegal. So, if that is something that is uncomfortable for you, totally get it. There are options that you can do that are legal, but psychedelics are a huge, incredible benefit to people struggling trying to find this mind-body connection. Our mind is this incredible protector, and so it disconnects us from our body. So, when we use substances like LSD, psilocybin, or mushrooms, that's the one I'm most familiar with, and ketamine. Ketamine is a medically approved one that you can use through a doctor. You can actually go to ketamine centers, and it does similar impacts. And what all of these psychedelics, hallucinogenics do is they lower the barrier between our mind and our body and allow us to tap into those sensations, those experiences that we've had. And so I've might have, in theory, at some point in my life, done psilocybin a few times or mushrooms. And it allows us to process the grief, the feelings, the emotions, because for me, I was so disconnected from my body that I couldn't tap into some of the stuff. And yet, using some of these substances allows us to feel it. The first time that I did psilocybin, I did it with somebody that I trusted. It was a big journey. And I just felt this overwhelming grief and I cried. Now, that's a big deal for me because I was trained as a child. I do not cry. I was punished when I cried by my abusers. And so I can't cry. And yet, the first time I did it, I just sobbed and sobbed. And it was so unusual for me because that's just not something I've worked in therapy. You know, I've done all different types of therapy for years and I can't. I've had a hard time. In fact, I still have a hard time crying. And yet, when I was able to have this barrier taken away between that, I was able to grieve the loss and the experiences that I'd had, the loss of the life that I could have had had I not experienced it. And it just opened up my mind. So I am definitely going to say, if you're going to do any of these kind of alternative hallucinogenics, do it with somebody that knows what they're doing, because it can really get you into some really deep places. And if somebody doesn't know how to pull you out of it and you're not prepared for it, you can end up stuck there and have a really bad, bad experience. And mine was painful. But when I did the deep experiences, the deep journeys, they're called, it was painful. It brought up a lot of stuff. And yet, then I could let that go and process it. It was no longer stuck in that black hole of energy. And it's amazing. And once again, if you don't want to do the illegal route, totally understand. Ketamine is an option that many practitioners are using that is legal, that some insurances actually even pay for. I just didn't want to do ketamine for my own personal reasons. And yet, it still works the same way. It gets you into lowering this mind-body barrier so that you can connect to whatever it is that you're experiencing. And then it's interesting, afterwards, I just felt like colors were more vibrant. Life was fantastic. I was able to feel things. My vision was more clear. I could just see things. I wasn't living in this just anxiety-ridden state. I was able to perceive so much more. And like I said, colors were more vibrant, things I wasn't really expecting. And so, but I am going to say, if you're going to do any of those, please, please, please make sure that you have somebody who knows how to guide you through it, because any of those psychedelics can get you into places that are very uncomfortable. And they're hugely beneficial. Johns Hopkins did a study recently in war veterans using psilocybin, and it showed tremendous benefit for the veterans having done psilocybin to help them with getting out of their trauma state. And so there's a lot of research being done on it.
Yeah, and the research that I had access to was in fact a veteran who had that stored trauma and went the route of LSD in a controlled environment, and it had a massive impact for the trauma responses that he had as a result of the PTSD. And the reason why we're having this conversation is obviously you had massive trauma that was stored for many, many years. And people who are listening could be operating from that same space. Again, we're not telling you just to go out and get high. That's not what we're saying.
No. In fact, don't do that, because that'll put you in, you don't. Make sure you do it in a controlled environment.
But it's, just opening the awareness that there are alternatives to talk therapy to help, particularly with stored trauma and get into the root of your trauma responses as well. So, Angie, as I knew, this was going to be an amazing episode, but thank you so much for your time. How can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah, the best way is actually through my website. My website is angiebarrettmovement.com. And just so y'all know, I spell my last name Berrett. I spell it a little unusual. So it's angiebarrettmovement.com. I've got a free, short, less than 5 minute movement, playful movement sequence you can do for overwhelm, help you learn how to get out of your trauma response. All my social medias are there. You can email me. So angiebarrettmovement.com is the best way.
Yes, so that will be in the show notes. And I hope you guys, if you have resonated with what Angie has said today, that you connect with her. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. And I want to remind you, you were not built to break. You were damn sure not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I'll see you again next week.